Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We had this A&R guy who, you know, brought us over there from Matador, and he basically, once we signed the deal with him, I mean, he had been, you know, on us and so dedicated to signing the band and very, you know, all over us,
right?
You know, trying to show us, you know, how serious he was about the band. And then once we signed, then he, you know, he didn't come to a single show. I couldn't get him on the phone. And then he quit, and we got dropped the week after he quit.
It's like a new to you now. The one before about the wish of gowns. Take all the calls, but I'm not forget all what's been said.
And this is our sidetrack episode for the week. You're listening to No Filler, the music podcast dedicated to sharing the often overlooked hidden gems that fill the space between the singles on our favorite records. My name's Quentin. I've got my brother Travis with me. We kickstarted our love fest for Spoon last week with our episode on their 1998 release, A Series of Sneaks, and we're going to continue with our Spoonathon with a single that they released just 1 year after A Series of Sneaks came out, all about that asshole A&R guy from Elektra that pretty much screwed them over after they got signed with Elektra.
Yeah, so we touched on this guy briefly last episode. So he is sort of to blame for the... I don't want to say failure of A Series of Sneaks, but like basically he was the reason that it didn't get the like support from the record label that it needed for having only been out for 3 months, you know?
Yeah.
And what was his name? Yeah, I know his last name is Lafitte. Is it? What's his last name? Or what's his first name?
No, his first name is Ron.
Okay, Ron. Yeah, yeah. Ron Lafitte. So the story goes that he was the kind of guy that got them signed, basically, or like pushed for them to get on Elektra, and then he gets them on, and then I'm not exactly sure what the story is with like his issues with the record label, but he was forced out of Elektra, and you know, all the while, you know, he wasn't doing what he should be doing to like push the record, and he wasn't answering their phone calls and all this weird stuff, and then he leaves or gets fired or whatever happened to him. And then,
no, he gets fired, dude.
Okay, so he gets fired, and then they get dumped from the record label.
Pretty much. And this was less than 4 months after the album's release. And again, we're talking about their second studio album, A Series of Sneaks, which came out in 1998. There is an interview on AV Music, the AV Club, that came out back in 2016. It's an article about the single that we're talking about today, which is called The Agony of Lafitte. And they were interviewing Jim Eno. And the way Eno puts it, he says, "No one would have ever known that a VP of Elektra," he's talking about Lafitte, "who had been chasing us for a year and a half, who was totally excited about our band, would ever just flake out and get fired from the label." Actually, this wasn't an interview with the AV Club. I'm sorry. AV Club pulled that quote from an interview that Jim Eno did back in 1999 for the Austin Chronicle. He goes on to say, "There was no indication at all that that would ever happen. That's why it's laughable. We never thought anything like that would happen." So... yeah, Ron Lafitte gets fired. Who knows why? As you heard in that little clip in the intro there, this was from an interview that Britt Daniel did with Mark Maron on his WTF podcast. Ron didn't return their phone calls. You know, like, he never showed up to a single show. Like, he just didn't. It's like he had zero interest in Spoon after he, quote unquote, chased them for a year and a half, just fighting to get them on this record label. And then he pretty much just drops off the face of the earth.
Yeah, so this is, you know, people say that this is what caused A Series of Seeks not to really kind of get the exposure that it needed early on. But the album does later go on to receive, like, critical, you know, Pitchfork put it on its top 100 favorite records of the 90s list. So, I mean, that's saying something for the, because, you know, when you think of 90s records, for the vast majority of people out there, Spoon does not cross your mind as a 90s band. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's the obvious, you know, go-to list of 90s records that are obviously on that list as well. But the fact that Pitchfork considers it one of the, you know, well, they call it top 100 favorite records of the 90s. So, you know, do they have a separate list of the best records? And this is just like some of the Pitchfork authors, you know, this is their favorite records. Who knows? But I'm just saying, you know, that's saying something. And some publication called Magnet ranked at number 29 on their top 60 albums of 93 to 2003, which is kind of a weird, I don't know why they split the 90s and the 2000s into one list. That's kind of weird. But anyway, I'm just saying, like, it is a critically acclaimed album. You know what I mean? But I think Spoon sees it as that was the moment where, like, their trajectory, like, just stopped, because they get signed on to a major record label and, you know, hey, we're going places. And then they get dumped 3 months later. And so they have to, like, start over again. And then, you know, so to tie in the what we're talking about today, they wrote these two songs as just kind of, it's almost like a satire, you know, about what happened to them. And, like,
yeah. And so I'm going to play another clip pretty much right where our little intro clip faded out. Where Britt Daniel kind of talks, he talks specifically about these singles, and it kind of explains some things. So here is just a little bit more of that interview.
His name was Lafitte, Ron Lafitte, and so we had a song called "The Agony of Lafitte," and we had a song called "Lafitte, Don't Fail Me Now." And this single that we put out was kind of the first thing that, like, gave the press or whatever, anybody, a reason to sort of latch on. Like, there was a story all of a sudden,
right?
You know?
Right,
and that was kind of the first thing that.
And that was on A Series of Sneaks?
It ended up as being like a bonus track on Series of Sneaks later, yeah.
And so there was like some good press behind it. Like, it had a little
for the first time, some people started taking notice. And then the next time we put out a record, things started happening, you know?
So they kind of used these songs almost like as a, not a publicity stunt, but, you know, like, it was something for journalists to write about, you know, like, hey, here's what happened with A Series of Sneaks. Here's the dude that's responsible for the failure, you know?
It makes you wonder if their intention was to get press exposure by writing something like this, you know, or if, like, this was just their way of, like, processing and dealing with it. Like, you know, it's basically a middle finger that they're given to both Electra and obviously Ron Lafitte. But, like,
my favorite part about this whole thing is that for this single, both side A and side B, the songs have his last name in the songs. Fucking love it, dude.
Yeah, and that's obviously the joke, you know. And they're you know, they're funny, they're clever little puns, you know. So yeah, they're trying to make fun of the situation. And how, like he was saying, like, that we never in a million years saw this coming, you know. But, you know, the irony being, like, it's like that's what got them the press attention that Ron Lafitte was supposed to be pushing and getting for them when A Series of Sneaks came out, you know what I mean? But, you know, they talk about how, like, I think we referenced this last episode. I like, this is like the dark period of Brett Daniels' music career. Like, he looks back at this with, like, you know,
it's like the lost period. Yeah.
Yeah. But, he also, apparently they refer to it as the locust period, like, you know, the plague period where they were plagued with bad luck and stuff. So, it, like, Jim Eno tells a story about how in between this and getting signed to Merge and coming out with Girls Can Tell, they were writing, you know, all of these songs and trying to record them for, like, demos or whatever. And, like, they were recording under a reel-to-reel, like, a tape machine, and, like, the tape, like, machine, like, malfunctions or something like that. And, like, the fear was that, like, oh, we just lost all those recordings, you know, that we just did. But, like, and they were about to, like, call it quits and shit. But, like, somehow the you know, the tape happened to cut at, like, the perfect spot to where, like, it just faded into the next song. So, like, they saw that as a sign, you know, like, let's keep going or whatever. But, like, they were on the verge of, like, just, you know, screw it, fuck it. Like, you know, it's not meant to be. Like we talked about earlier, Brett Daniel had several other little side gigs that he did, you know. But, yeah. So, let's play
Lafitte Don't Fail Me Now, which is our official sidetrack for this episode. So again, in the intro, we played just a little bit of side A on the record, called The Agony of Lafitte. And here is a good chunk of side B on that single. It is called Lafitte Don't Fail Me Now. A good song, dude.
Yeah, so, you know, here's what I wanted to say about just the overall, like, composition and, like, vibe of the song. Like, mm-hmm. This is the same vibe that you're gonna hear in Girls Can Tell, and you know, it sounds like it could be, you know, a B-side for Girls Can Tell. It's got that same, like, tone, and, like, there's and you can hear a definite change in, like, the sound of that song versus what they had done with a series of sneaks. And like, it makes you wonder if like the drama of what happened to them, like sort of changed, like, cause it's this song has kind of a somber tone, right?
Yeah. It's acoustic, right? It's an acoustic track for the most part. It's basically,
There's an electric guitar in like the second verse. He starts doing those little riffs that he kind of throws in the background.
Right, which are really cool,
number one. But yeah, I'm just saying, like, this sounds like a Girls Can Tell song. You know what I mean?
So yeah, so let's backtrack real quick. So just a reminder. So A Series of Sneaks came out in May of 1998. And they were recording that album as far back as 97. So, you know, a year earlier. And then this single, The Agony of Lafitte, was released in November of 1999. So, you know, in between the release of A Series of Sneaks, or maybe even in the same time frame, the time period, he was writing these songs for this single. And then Girls Can Tell comes out in February of 2001. So that's not, you know, from November of 99 to February of 2001. So The Agony of Lafitte was released just a couple months before, you know, just a few months before Girls Can Tell came out. Now that's its release date. It's not saying that they, you know, wrote these songs within that time, but yeah. Yeah, you can see the progression. So again, Girls Can Tell is the album we're going to cover next when we revisit Spoon in a couple weeks, which is their third studio album. And yeah, like we had mentioned earlier, there's a big difference in sound between A Series of Sneaks and Girls Can Tell. Just the progression of Spoon's overall sound.
Well, there's a quote from Jim, you know, from that interview that we played a clip from last time. And I don't have it pulled up, so I'll play it in the episode where we talk about Girls Can Tell. But he mentions like that shift in like their songwriting style between Series of Sneaks and Girls Can Tell, and how Britt Daniel, basically, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically Britt Daniel, you know, comes to the conclusion that like, I don't have to rely on a distorted guitar to write these songs anymore. You know, I can throw in a piano if I want, you know, and which you definitely hear. You hear the piano prominently on Girls Can Tell.
Oh yeah.
And then definitely on Kill the Moonlight later. So like, yeah, that shift had happened in the short period between like them getting dumped from Elektra and writing these two, like, you know, satire pieces about Ron Lafitte, you know what I mean? And like, it just makes you wonder if getting dumped from Elektra is what like made him stop and like sort of like just explore these new, because it's like they don't have a label anymore, you know, they're doing these songs just kind of like on the side, you know.
I would like to know exactly when he wrote these songs, you know. Did he, I mean, he had to have written these songs after, well, I don't know, man, like,
I mean, it couldn't have been that much longer after.
Well, but he could have even written these songs before they officially got dumped from the record. You know?
Nah, dude.
Because, well,
why would he write? But why would he write a song?
Lafitte's not answering their phone calls.
Yeah, I know. But why would he write a song attacking their record label? You know, manager, whatever. While they're on the label,
you can write a song and have zero intentions of ever releasing it. You know,
that's true. I just my assumption would be that they wrote this after they were dumped and like,
yeah, you're probably right.
Cause you can sense the annoyance and you know, cause there's that line about like planning for your retirement in your 30s or whatever.
Right. Like he's, you know, just singing, I mean, about, yeah, writing about how this Lafitte guy doesn't give a fuck about,
yeah,
anyone else.
Yeah. This asshole
himself.
Here. Yeah.
Saying things like, are you honest with anyone?
Yeah.
You know, it's time to take the trash out. I love it, dude.
Yeah. What's funny is it's
like
essentially
Jimino said, that quote that I you know, I quoted from with Jim Eno speaking with the Austin Chronicle back in 99, he said that, you know, this was a laughable situation. Like, it was just something that they never thought would happen.
Right. So they you know, they're trying to make light of it, but at the same time, it almost comes off as like a breakup song or something like that. You know what I mean? Like a bitter breakup song where you're you know, just writing these lyrics about this person that just dumped you, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what happened to them, you know? They got fucking played, dude. Yeah. But yeah, it's a great song, like you said, dude. Like, the composition of it is great. Like, those, when he brings in that electric guitar to do those little, in the background, uh-huh. Like, that's a cool, like, almost like, it's got almost like a 60s British Invasion type pop vibe.
I had like a Fleetwood Mac vibe with this song. Maybe that was just me, and just hearing it right now, I just for some reason thought Fleetwood Mac, but yeah, 60s, 70s rock vibe. Yeah, it's just another solid Spoon song, dude. Like we've said before, Spoon is unsinkable. Spoon can do no wrong.
Right, and they proved it here, dude. I mean, think about it. They get dumped by a major label, come out with a song like making fun of the whole situation, and that gets them like attention and back in the spotlight, and then Merge picks them up, you know?
Dude, so that's the perfect spot to leave off for when we pick back up again in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and what's great about
our episode on Girls Can Tell.
Yeah, and like we said, like, this is the perfect like transition into Girls Can Tell, because it sounds a lot like the stuff he was writing for Girls Can Tell, because he was writing it all at the same time, obviously.
Yep. Here's something that I found out while we were recording this just now, dude. And this is going to be our outro for this sidetrack. Have you heard of the band Nada Surf?
Yeah, dude.
Are you a fan? I never really got into them.
I don't know if I ever delved into them.
I know I've heard a few of their songs.
I've definitely heard of them.
Apparently, they have a cover of The Agony of Lafitte. And whoa. They also... Yeah, dude. I haven't listened to it. We're going to play it and listen to it for the first time together for this outro. Apparently... They had some shit with Elektra as well, so they decided to do a cover of this Spoon song.
But did they have shit underneath Ron Lafitte as their manager?
I don't know, dude. So I was looking all this shit up on the fly. While honestly, dude, there was about 2 minutes of you talking earlier that I wasn't listening at all, and then I just threw in some generic responses. So I hope they worked. I was looking up some articles to see if I could find anything on it, and there was an article that came out in 2003 on the New York Times talking about Nada Surf recovering from this incident that they had to deal with Elektra, basically trying to get them to steer away from their sound to write more quote-unquote popular sounding songs. One little line here from this article that stood out to me while I wasn't paying attention to you earlier. One of the guys from Nada Surf recalled conversations with the label Elektra that proceeded along the lines of, quote, "We don't just need a song that could do well, we need miracles. Something ironic, with a massive, massive, easy-to-sing chorus that preferably talks about sex or high school or both." Fuck that, dude. So, clearly, think about that shit, dude. That's the nightmare, right, that every band fears when signing on to a major record label, that the label's going to try to influence their sound and just... all they want is for them to churn out hits. And that sounds to me like this is exactly what they were dealing with Elektra. So yeah, we're going to close out this episode with Nada Surf's cover of Spoon's single, The Agony of Lafitte. And be sure to check us out on SoundCloud. Subscribe to us on iTunes or any other podcast app that you use. Hop onto our website, nofailurepodcast.com. There you can read show notes and dive a little bit deeper into our episodes. And next week we'll be covering Jimmy Eat World's 1999 album Clarity. And that's going to do it for this Sidetrack episode. Thank you, as always, for listening. Again, this is Not a Serf's cover of Spoon's The Agony of Lafitte. And we will shout at you next week. My name is Quentin.
My name is Travis.
Bye-bye.
Tell me the truth. Ain't no one watching you except Ventura Highway. It's like I knew.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.